Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 92-year-old Lawson Sakai of Morgan Hill, California. You'll find photos and video of him at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. There's also information there about where you can hear Mr. Sakai in person on February 13th. And here's a spoiler alert for you. You're going to hear him again on Hometown Heroes that weekend, too, because there's just too much to his story to squeeze it all into one episode. This is going to be a to-be-continued when we run out of time today, because I want you to get the full picture, not just of that famous rescue of 211 men of the 1st Battalion, 141st Infantry Regiment, part of the Texas Division, the 36th Infantry Division. That was a 2-week battle that has come to exemplify the courage and bravery of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, the most decorated unit of its size in the entire war. But also to hear about the aftermath of that rescue and the rest of World War II, Mr. Sakai's experiences in the more than 70 years since all that unfolded. So this will be continued next week. We've heard Mr. Sakai share how he volunteered for the Army the day after the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, but was told he was an enemy alien and not eligible to serve. A year and a half later, that had changed, and he was ready for deployment with the 442nd. So you mentioned, you know, when you're in the Army, you're going to kill or you're going to get killed. When you headed overseas, did you think you'd be coming back?
I didn't think I'd come back.
You really didn't?
No.
You thought this is it?
Yeah.
Were you okay with that?
That's what we signed up for. You know, we're kids. Mm-hmm. When I signed up, I was 18. I'm 20 now going overseas. We all had the same frame of mind. We're going to go out there and do our job. If we get killed, we get killed. You know, that's part of war.
Mm-hmm. So what was your job in the 442nd?
Well, I had a BAR. I was 5'9", mm-hmm. and not big, but probably 4 or 5 inches taller than most of the others, especially the boys from Hawaii who were 5 foot or, you know, mm-hmm. they're small guys. So the bigger guy usually gets the BAR. It's a little heavier.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning, I was just like anybody else in the squads. But after we got overseas, we got into a lot of combat. We had a lot of casualties. We were down to about 50% strength and short of everybody, and I became a squad leader. We finished up in Italy and moved over to France in August of 1944 and invaded the south of France and gradually went north. And that's where General Dahlquist of the 36th Division that we were attached to then began pushing all of his units, because we're only less than 50 miles from the German border.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to be the first American general to cross Germany. And of course, right north of us is General Patton. Guess who's going to go first? Well, Eisenhower stopped Patton, mm-hmm. but I don't think Dahlquist knew that.
Mm-hmm.
So by pushing his troops, saying there's no Germans out there, just keep going, that 1st Battalion of the 141st Regiment kept pushing, and they're over 5 miles beyond where the rest of us are.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, the Germans just surrounded them. Hitler's orders were annihilate the Americans, and they were closing in on them. That's why people say the 442nd was used, but Dahlquist sent the 2nd Battalion. They couldn't make a headway. Sent the 3rd Battalion. They didn't make a headway. Then he called the 442nd. And even though we were down to less than 50% strength, we managed to get through. So during that 2-week battle, we had over 800 casualties. Over 200 boys were killed, and the weather was awful, raining, even snow. A couple of days we had fog so bad the Air Force would not let any planes fly. The conditions were just awful for both Germans and for us. But when the 442nd broke through, there were 211 men left of the 141st 1st Battalion. Mm-hmm. About 50 of them were actually wounded, litter people. Usually there's about 18 line officers in a battalion. There were only three lieutenants left. We talked to Marty Higgins, who was a senior lieutenant, many years later as we got together. And he told us that they were out of food. The water hole that they could go to was zeroed in by the Germans, so they couldn't go get water. They had no medical supplies. They couldn't treat their wounded. And he said, we had so little ammunition left, we decided to make one last stand and would not have made the day if the 442nd hadn't come through on that day, which was October 30. Mm-hmm. So, but he was whisked away right away with the rest of them. He never knew circumstances of, you know, how it all happened. Well, we met him many years later.
Right. And that perspective, I imagine, left you no doubt as to whether you guys saved their lives.
Well,
I mean, if he tells you they wouldn't have made it, they wouldn't have made it.
We didn't know that at the time.
Right.
You know, we found out later. But our objective, you know, was to chase the Germans out of there. And, you know, that's all you're thinking about. You're not concerned with get those guys rescued. It was just part of the war.
So 211 of them had their lives saved because of your willingness to put yourselves in harm's way. And then you find out later, well, really about four times that many casualties among the 442. Is that hard to swallow when you realized it?
Not really. Eventually, we would have had to keep going anyway, you know, because we're trying to chase the Germans back to Germany.
Right.
So the battle has to keep going. We're still at war. So
it's just timing. You're saying all those guys that got wounded would have been wounded eventually?
Yeah, probably.
Including you?
I was wounded badly on the 28th.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't even get to see this eventual liberation of the Lost Battalion. And obviously we want to hear about that. But can you give us a sense, maybe even before that, when you're in this kind of combat, in these kind of conditions, you describe the weather a little bit for us. But as far as the moment to moment and the danger that you feel yourself in and how you keep going, how you keep fighting, how you keep pressing ahead, what were those days like?
It's just really hard to describe. The weather was so bad. And, of course, we didn't have winter clothing and we're soaking wet from the rain. And the hills were muddy. We're in the Vosges Mountains, the thickest forest that we'd ever been in. And the Germans had the 88-millimeter anti-aircraft weapon, lowered it down, and started shooting it at the infantry. And that sound of that 88 going off and exploding, that shrill sound coming, is something that I've never heard duplicated in movies or anything. It's just mind-shattering. You know, when it comes directly at you, wow, you know, it just, the sound itself is enough to blow you apart. But when it would hit these trees, branches would come off. Sometimes half of a tree would come falling down, weighing maybe 1,000 pounds. A lot of guys got crushed. Just, and the morning that I got hit, the 28th of October, we're going to mount a real strong attack at daybreak. And the Germans probably sensed that we were, because we had a big battle on the 27th. We gained the high ground. We dug in as best we could. That early that morning, the barrage came in, probably lasted 20, 25 minutes, maybe more. I don't know. Maybe 100 rounds, just bang, 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 just continuously. We were pinned down. You couldn't move. We had a lot of casualties right at that time. And, of course, when I got it, well, I thought I was dead, so I was out of it. But
I imagine you had probably had some close calls before that.
Yeah, I got wounded twice in Italy, And then once before in France, so but they weren't that bad, you know.
Well, define that, because you say, yeah, I got wounded once. Well, yeah, and most people have never been wounded, period. So when you say weren't that bad, what do you mean?
You know, I got patched up and I could go back a day or two. Mm-hmm. But the last time, the shrapnel that got me in, if it came straight through, it would have blown a hole through me, but it came in at an angle, so it wrapped around in my ribs here. Oh, that was really painful. It just, you know, a red hot piece of steel in there, and it just, your body just gives way. You just curl up and you can't breathe. And I was sure I was dead. I remember I told the medic, just let me die right there. And he pumped me full of morphine, because when I woke up, I was on a train, on a litter. They were going to the American Hospital in Dijon, which is not too far away, for surgery. And I don't know how I survived that one. But guys were getting killed left and right, you know. Mostly the barrage from the artillery, just an awful shattering of not only the artillery shell, but the tree trunks and limbs coming down. In Italy, we had a few vineyards, a few olive orchards. Most of the hills were bare. Got to France and eastern France, and all of a sudden this huge forest that we had to go through. The Germans were already entrenched, dug in, so we had to go into the forest, dig them out.
You're going into a meat grinder.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to cut things off right there, because we're out of time on this episode. But next time on Hometown Heroes, we'll hear about how Lawson Sakai made it back to the 442nd 3 months after he was wounded, and the really unique way he met the man he'll be speaking with on February 13th, one of the Lost Battalion survivors that he helped rescue. That man, Al Tortolano, appeared on Hometown Heroes 5 years ago, and you'll find his podcast online at hometownheroesradio.com. That's also where you'll find the details on next weekend's event in Morgan Hill, California, with Mr. Sakai and Mr. Tortolano. Thanks for listening today. I'll look forward to bringing you the rest of this Purple Heart recipient story next time. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.